No Syntax is brought to you by Caffeine Driven Media, where we're black as the devil, hot as hell, pure as an angel, sweet as love. Hello, and welcome to No Syntax. I am Landon Niles, your host. Welcome to episode 17, given on this day, 22 September 2019. I'm glad to be here to talk to you all about shit, reading your emails, and discussing your comments and points of view. Why? Because, as always, you make this show great. And I didn't forget the music this time. Awesome. Now, it might be ever so slight, so maybe I just bump it up a notch. There we go. Much better, much better, much better. Good morning. How's everybody doing? Well, it's a while late in the morning. It's about 11:24 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Coffee. And I'm going with something a little bit different today. I am actually trying to slow down when I speak because it seems as though that I get hypercaffeinated, as we all know. And I have this tendency to really just speak so fast that my brain can't keep up. My mouth is just going 100 miles an hour and my brain is going 10. So I'm really trying to make sure I slow down. I will see how well I adapt to this new method. I don't think it's going to work, to be honest with you. I'm trying to keep an open mind about it, but I really, really don't think it's going to happen. We'll see. Anyway, good morning. It's actually pretty nice today. I was just out with the dogs, and like I said, it's about 11:30 this morning, and it still feels relatively cool. As a matter of fact, just out of curiosity, it is, well, it's 81 degrees outside, but it doesn't feel like 81, feels more like 71, which is a good thing. But I will tell you, the rest of the week is going to be in the mid to high 80s, low 90s, and I'm not understanding it. Yesterday, I think it was about 70, 75 degrees, really nice, nice breeze, very cool in the shade, all around a nice day, with the exception of when I went out to do some stuff outside about 4-ish in the afternoon, and I felt like I felt like a spitwad after I was done. Really. Bottom line is, I'm getting tired of the weather. I'm really ready for the change to be here. And here we are, closing out of September. Which, God, this year is going by quick. We're closing out September, and we're going to be in October, and that's freaking crazy. Absolutely crazy how fast this year is going. And I'm thinking back, going, "Fuck! Next month is my 1 year out from my retirement. What the hell is going on here?" But the weather yesterday was phenomenal. The weather this morning is phenomenal. It's supposed to get up to 90 today. And, I think that sucks because I want the cooler weather to be here. I really, really do. I mean, for me, I look at two times of year that I really, really enjoy. And I think I feel we all, I'm not speaking for everybody, but maybe the majority, the transition time between winter and spring and the transition time between summer and fall are probably the two best times of year throughout overall. Now, a lot of people are really diehard on summer. They love summertime. They can't stand fall. They can't stand winter. Others are the fall, winter / winter type individuals, which that's me. I love winter. I love snow. I love the cold. It's an excuse to really, really drink more coffee and to run the fireplace and all that other great shit. I love it. But, I just can't wait. The days are progressively getting short, which incrementally the temperatures, you know, are starting to go down, but just not, they're going down ever so slightly, just not fast enough, I think. And, be careful what you wish for. But I mean, if that means we get more snow than what we got last year, I'm fine with that. I'm absolutely fine with that. I don't mind working from home, in a manner of speaking. You know what I mean? Anyway, coffee, excuse me. So anyway, yeah, so there's that. There's also the time change. So spring forward, fall back type shit. I went ahead and looked it up because I was curious how close we were to falling back from springing forward. And that will take place on 4 November 2019. So the night of the 3rd, early morning of the 4th, between I guess it's 2 and 3 a.m., we will fall back and we will gain an hour of sleep. Yay. Moving on. I don't want to spend too much time talking about the weather. I feel like I'm just talking about the weather, talk about the weather. But anyway, yeah. So moving on, most of you, if not all of you, have saw on either Facebook or Twitter that we went ahead and we postponed the show. We postponed the show. That's a good one. We postponed the show to this week simply because of an accident that I was involved in last weekend. And I really went back and I looked at what I wrote, and it almost in some slight way kind of alludes to making it seem more than what it was. And that really wasn't my intent. The accident wasn't anything major. It was a fender bender, minor on my part, major on the guy that rear-ended my ass, because he's the one that's having to answer to his wife for damaging the fuck out of the front end of her Audi. And for me, minor, because I basically got my tow hitch and my rear bumper bent down about 2.5 inches downward to the 6 o'clock position. Yeah, it was really weird. Sitting there, minding my own business, at a stoplight, waiting for it to turn green. The left lane got the green light because that was the turning lane. He did say he wasn't paying attention, but I'm assuming what he saw was the cars on the left going. That meant go. He gunned it and he hit my truck. Now, when he hit my truck, he hit it with such an impact that my assumption was that he gunned it. He thought we were all full on going, ready to go, and didn't pay attention to my brake lights and hit me full on. Maybe this is probably over embellishing, maybe close to 20 miles per hour hitting my rear bumper. And I say that because all everybody heard at the intersection was a real loud crack, similar in nature to a baseball bat hitting a ball and it splitting, you know, being splintered, and amplify that by about 10. And that's the sound that everybody heard at the intersection. What I felt in respect to that sound wasn't felt. Let's put it that way. So the sound would make it feel as though that the impact should be great, and it wasn't. But I got out of the truck and I went back to yell at the guy, and I couldn't, because first thing I saw was a emblem on his shirt, and it had to do with the fire department from his local area. And so automatically, you know, calm down, respect to first responders. And then the other piece is his daughter being, you know, in the front passenger seat, and then looking down at his car. I don't mean to laugh, but holy shit, motherfucker, you got what you deserved. I wasn't angry at the time. I mean, I was, don't get me wrong. I was upset. But at the time, speaking with him, talking to the police, exchanging information, the police running my driver's license, all that other shit, you know, I am relatively calm. It wasn't until I got home that the more I thought about it, the more I really delved and held on to this entire situation that my truck was damaged. And I was just pissed. I was completely livid. I'm dropping cuss words left and right because of this whole situation. And there was nothing I could really do about it. But I guess I have to really count my blessings, because overall, this guy, it was his wife's car. Okay. Excuse me. Coffee again. Mm-mm-mm. This guy hits my truck. The tow hitch that I have on my tow bar is a battering ram. That's the best way I could describe it. It is a fucking heavy, huge battering ram drop hitch. Okay. So he hits that. The crack that I heard was that battering ram, my tow hitch, going through his bumper his front bumper, top of the front bumper, well, majority of the front bumper, the grill itself into the radiator, at the same time pushing and crumpling the hood of the car in and going through the radiator and the fan shroud. So basically, that battering ram took out his entire front end. In comparison, again, like I said, my bumper bent down about 2.5 inches towards the 6 o'clock position. And I'm like, wow, you know, it would still suck to see my bumper at a cant, you know, at an angle. But I was just like, oh my God, I can't freaking believe this. My dogs are running around upstairs. I may have to pause just to let you know. So in case I have to, I will let you know before I pause here. But anyway, so as I was saying, was really upset about the whole thing. And I was just upset. I was like, I couldn't believe it. Anyway, so I wound up taking the truck in. It was really cool was that his insurance company like called me like within the hour, and they openly admitted fault. And I think that was the other thing is like he openly admitted fault. He wasn't trying to be a dick about anything. He wasn't turning around going, oh God, you know, he shouldn't be having that type of a hitch on his truck and everything. That should be illegal. Blah, 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 blah. No, he didn't do that. He took full responsibility, and he basically said that, you know, he wasn't paying attention. He thought everybody was going, he hit the gas and went, you know, and of course, and stopped abruptly. So the bad thing about it between the insurance companies was that my insurance company, so I was already on the phone with mine, not knowing what he was saying to his, because that people could say stuff to your face and then say the polar opposite to their insurance to get out of whatever trouble that they think they're going to be in, even if they're clearly at fault. This didn't happen. What didn't happen was communication between my insurance company and his insurance company. So I was working a claim on my behalf. He was working a claim on my behalf, if you will, but the information he gave them, the information I gave my insurance company, they didn't call to collaborate and say, hey, yeah, we know you're at fault. You guys are doing this. What's the claim number? What's the course of action? What are you, are you in communication with our client? Blah, 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 blah. Nothing like that. I had to call them to make sure everybody was on the same sheet of music. What the fuck, guys? What do I pay you for? I mean, come on. And I will say his insurance company was easier to work with. Not that my insurance company wasn't, but his insurance company was phenomenal. There were a few minor things that I had to correct, and I had to basically put them on the right path. Excuse me, rebirth on the right path with. But yeah, got that squared away. So it's in the shop right now. I was supposed to get it Friday. That's not happening. And I knew it wasn't going to happen because they didn't do the estimate until Monday. And then they told me, well, by Friday, you should have it. I'm like, okay, so you're saying the bumper and all the component parts and my rear bumper getting re-rhino lined, all that's going to be done by Friday? I don't think so. Long story short, it's been pushed to middle of next week, which I'm a little upset about because I want my truck now. You know, I want my baby home. You know, and I think anybody would feel the same way, right? So, but I'm trying to be patient. Coffee, again, please. My throat is rather dry this morning. So, moving on. So that Saturday, when it happened, I woke up Sunday completely feeling like shit. I didn't think that the impact was really that big, that huge. I didn't really feel much. Maybe it was hearing the crack that caused a distraction, and he actually hit me harder than what I thought. And that shock, that impact, you know, went through my body. And of course, you know, getting up there in age, but it aggravated my shoulders. It really made my neck sore, my upper back sore. So I was really already, I was in enough pain already that I just had to settle out for the week. And then, of course, between the coordination of getting with the insurance companies and the body shop that is working with my vehicle and making sure that everything was on point, just took up a lot of my time. So it didn't afford me a lot of time or opportunity to work on and basically finish the show. So that's where we're at with that overall. Now, they did give me a car rental. Let's talk about the car rentals for a second. I'm about to burp here, so I apologize ahead of time. Oh. Excuse me. Good morning. So I'm sorry, I'm drinking a lot of coffee today. So here's the thing. I keep saying let me get it all out. Okay. So car rentals. This is interesting. I never paid attention before and I didn't think about it until just now. Imagine that. So they did give me another truck. Now they didn't give me a 2500. They gave me a Ram 1500. So I thought, well, that's fine. I used to have a Ram 15. So I was perfectly fine with that. I was like, hey, okay. And I asked him, I said, you know, what I've noticed is every time that I've turned in my truck to the dealership for an extensive service or, and then the truck is new, so nothing extensive, but getting aftermarket stuff done or whatever, they've always given me a loaner vehicle commensurate with what I drive. And I think that's pretty smart because some people don't know how to make that adjustment. If they drive a truck, they have a hard time driving a car or vice versa. And it seems to be the recurring theme when something goes on with my truck that they always give me a truck or attempt to give me a truck or an SUV-like vehicle that is close parallel to what I drive. And I think that's smart. I don't know why they don't do it on a constant basis. I mean, if people are accustomed to driving a certain type of vehicle, that's the vehicle that when they go or travel and decide to rent one, that's what they should get. The problem is, like, if you work for the government and you travel, you've got to go with a compact or subcompact. You really can't go with a sedan or anything bigger, unless you have no choice. You know, then you got to get approvals and all that other junk. But my point being is that I rather enjoy the fact that they've got me in another truck. Now, here's the funny thing about this truck, though. This truck is a 2019 model, but it's listed as the Classic Edition. Now, you look at the outside, it looks classic. It looks like an older model truck. It looks like something from 2007, 8, or 9, but it's a 2019. Where you factor in the classic piece is not only the front grille, but the interior as well. And let me explain. The touchscreen on this truck is smaller than my iPhone, which the backup camera, you can't see shit when you're backing up on that damn thing. There's no point in even utilizing the backup camera. It is a complete waste of time. The dash panel is primarily analog and monochrome digital. So I'm like, okay, people really like this. I can see why they do, but I'm so spoiled at this point, it's just not for me. But if I ever had to go back to a basic, I probably would overall. Anyway, nice truck, but I want my truck back. So moving on. Last week I didn't get to read an email from Leslie. Leslie was on episode 15. I was gonna read this email on episode 16, but didn't. Or at least I don't think I did. So if I did, oh well, it wouldn't be me if I didn't do this anyway and completely forget. So I went through and started looking through some of the information on here in this email. And I'm not going to read the entire email, just some bits and pieces that caught my eye, made me smile, and tickled my bone, my funny bone. Boner. So we talked about in a couple of the previous episodes, we talked about names, what people call me. And I've always said that it just depends on the person. I don't have a physical preference. If you could say name, well, I guess names can be physical. Name, noun, person, place, or thing, right? But I never really took into consideration that my birth name is James. Call me Jim, right? Some people call me Jim, and we talked about this before. And what our favorite librarian writes, she says, I can't see you as a Jimmy. Maybe when you were little? James is a tad formal for a man who is jeans/t-shirts, if not wearing a uniform. So I think Jim. I am always Leslie, an old white fart at UIW, that's University of Incarnate Word, tried Les, and I had to smack him down. I knew a Les, nice man, loved women, loved books, loved libraries, got his master's in his 60s, had the worst teeth I have ever seen, and couldn't dress himself. Plaids with stripes, stripes with dots, etc. She goes on to say, yes, a professional librarian has a master's degree from a program accredited by the American Library Association. There are tracks of a sort. You can do a public, corporate, or academic library track. Or in my case, I just wanted to get through the degree in 2 years while working full-time at UT's main library. I'm assuming University of Texas. Some 18 hours were required classes, one being statistical research methods. This is why I need to slow down, people. Dear God in heaven, that was a horrible class. I managed to pass somehow, but it scarred me for life. Since I had several years of experience, I didn't have to write a thesis or complete a practicum. My boss, whom I still exchange letters with, had me work in several other areas of the library, and I got some great experience that saved me from thesis/practicum. I read on my lunch hour, but all the reading I do otherwise is professional reading. Got to keep up with the profession. And book reviews. I have a reading list I will never get through. That's the bad thing about book reviews. I read reviews for areas I don't buy for, and I add titles to my to-read list. I do a lot of writing. If you're interested, here is a link to the textbook I've written for the first half of my for-credit class. I still have yet to click that link. My apologies, Leslie. She goes on to say, bathroom etiquette. Sorry, I can't speed up my peeing. Like men can. It's a rather dainty tinkle compared to the stallion-like pissers I often hear in the next stall. Delicate blossoms do fart, and yes, women fart in the bathroom. Except my sister. She swears she doesn't fart. What women notice is hand washing. A while back, one of our students, workers, took a mighty shit and walked out without washing her hands. After that, I could never see her without thinking of her pooey hands. I agree. I don't think I could look at the same person. I don't think I could look at the same person the same again. How about that? Let's just say that. I know if I am knowing that an individual took a mass dump of mass destruction in the toilet and did all the wiping, pulled up their pants, and left without washing their hands, I would not go near them. As a matter of fact, if they brought food dishes to a potluck, I would not eat any of their food. Because to me, that is an indicator of they're not very hygienically sound, in my opinion. Excuse me, coffee. So that little part of your email got me thinking, because there have been times where I've either gone to take a leak or gone to take a dump, and there's somebody in the stall next to me who probably wasn't there but seconds before me. They take a shit, and it seems like they get a couple of wipes in, and they pull up, and they walk out. And I'm like, your ass can't be that clean. There's just no way. I mean, when I was younger, I remember taking shits that totally amazed me. I mean, logs would come out of my butthole. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That came out of my bowels. I mean, huge, to the point that they were almost protruding from the top lid of the toilet. I know that's TMI, but what I'm getting at is there's times where you take certain shits, and there's different classifications of shits, okay? So you have the mystery shit, okay? And the mystery shit comes in two forms. So one, you take a shit, you feel it come out of you, you go to wipe and there's nothing on the toilet, nothing on the toilet paper. You look in the toilet and there's nothing there. That's what I call the mystery shit. Then there's the never ending shit. Now, what I mean by never ending is this. You go to take a shit. It's clearly left your bowels. You have nothing else to expunge from your system. You go to wipe your ass and you could never get it clean for whatever reason. It seems like no matter how much you wipe, it just never goes away. Unbelievable. But so those are two classifications there. I won't get into the other ones, but holy crap. You know, here's the thing. People not washing their hands before they go to the bathroom really totally confuses me. I mean, from one perspective, I could see if a man goes to the stall and goes to take a leak, whether it's at a standing stall or sitting, right? That I think they're of the mindset that, well, I'm touching my own skin. I'm touching my own penis. I'm touching my own clothes. Therefore, I do not need to wash my hands because I really haven't touched anything else that's gross. I mean, that's a big assumption, right? But I'm sitting here thinking, look, you can't sit there and on the face of things think the bathroom that you're walking in, the handle that you touch to come into the bathroom, the handle that you touch upon exiting, anything that you handle in the bathroom to include yourself, there that there's no transference, that you must wash your hands at any point in time, that you should wash your hands at any point in time. And even though the stalls are automatic, that they've got sensors, in some cases, you may have to touch a handle. So, or even if you're touching the bathroom handle because the water is not automatic, or you're touching the soap dispenser, you know, your theory is you should wash your hands regardless. But let me tell you, word of advice. After you wash your hands in the bathroom, no matter how good the soap smells, no matter how clean your hands are, it doesn't look good on you walking out of the bathroom sniffing your fingers. Just saying. Now, moving on and talking about that, I feel sorry for individuals who are that hygienically sound that when they go into a bathroom that doesn't have paper ass gaskets, that they will literally square for square take pieces of toilet paper, that they will literally take pieces of toilet paper by square and lay them on the toilet lid before they sit down. I feel sorry for those individuals who freaking like have the Hershey squirts and really got to go. Do you just go ahead and sacrifice yourself to the toilet seat in that it's in hopes that it's clean, that nobody else's butt sweat or butt grease is on there? I feel bad for those people because there are some people that are just like that. You know, I mean, it is what it is. Now, to answer your question, speed up peeing like men can. I don't say that we speed up our peeing. I think it really has to do with the level that we retain and how long we hold it. It dictates how much comes out and how fast it comes out to the sound like we're doing pressurized peeing. But no. And I think as we get older, that goes out the window. It's if you go pee, you go pee, and whatever the flow is, that's just what it is. I don't think you could force it at that point. I guess depending on how the health of your prostate. Okay, moving on. She goes on to talk about coffee. She says, coffee is taken black. Mother was a dietitian and was a no milk, no sugar, those are unnecessary calories believer. One of my best friends takes a little bit of coffee in her hot milk. That's just nasty. I have become lazy and usually use the Keurig. I occasionally use a Melitta cone and filter. Question, can a Chemex or French press be placed on the warming portion of a stovetop? I cannot abide by lukewarm coffee. I like it hot. Do you like that, Leslie? Hot. I like my coffee hot. I like it hot. Anyway, so to answer your question. Now, past experience influencing present thought. Coffee, excuse me. I am chugging away. Rocco. I'll talk about Rocco in a minute. So here's what I would recommend. And this is what I do. I'm not saying you have to do this because I still use a Chemex. And I thought about that at one point in time that you've got a full Chemex, you've got a single cup of coffee. Unless you are going to pour all that liquid gold into a big ass mug and drink it, that the coffee is going to be there. The molecules are going to slow down and it's going to cool off. And you don't want that. I get it. I don't like cold coffee either. After, you know, I'll try cold brew. Don't get me wrong. I like cold brew. But if I'm making hot coffee for the purpose of drinking hot coffee, again, hot, that's what I'm going to drink. So that being said, I did put one of my Chemex on a warming plate, and lo and behold, I'm not sure what the temperature of the warming plate got to, but it was enough to shatter the Chemex and coffee went everywhere. Not sure what type of French press you have. I have a Bordom French press and it has a plastic base and a metal frame, with the beaker set inside. So therefore I can't put that on a warmer. So I really realistically wouldn't recommend it. I don't know if anybody else out there who's listening, has an idea for that. But what I suggest or what I do is I have a Stanley thermos So I have a simple $20 Stanley thermos that I keep under the countertop. And if I'm going to have more coffee made than what I'm going to consume in a reasonable amount of time, I will pour the remainder of the coffee inside the thermos to keep it hot. And it works. I usually do it that way. I do that for work. So I'll have some in my to-go mug, which is also a insulated mug. And then I fill the Stanley thermos and take that with me. Because think about it. I mean, yeah, you put coffee in a mug, it's not going to stay warm for very long. That's a recommendation. That is a method. Cause trying to put my coffee back in, trying to heat up coffee in a microwave and then drinking it sucks. It doesn't taste good. It doesn't taste the same. So, I don't know if anybody else has got any other ideas. You just might want to stick to utilizing, your Melitta cone and filter and just sticking with however, I'd imagine that only makes your single cup, right? That's the one that rests on your mug. Just stick with a single cup and then you won't have to worry about that. Excuse me, coffee again. One is good, but my throat is really dry today. The other piece. Oh, so talking about your Keurig, somebody asked me the other day, what is your worst coffee moment or coffee experience? I will tell you, I have not had a worst coffee experience, but I've had a worst coffee making, a bad coffee making, not worst, but bad coffee making experience that involved a Keurig. Now, this was back in 2014 in Tampa, and I had bought one of the newer generations of the Keurig, and I was completely ecstatic because it came out, had everything. I got the big one, top of the line, big reservoir, everything, you know, for what it was at that time. And I was so ecstatic to have it. I got home, I went ahead and did all the pre-treatment and everything, got everything set up, and I was so excited. I'm like, yep, gonna make coffee. Made coffee, and I had it for 60 days. 60. On the 60th day, to the day, I kid you not. Damn it, excuse me. Really dry here. But anyway, I lift up the lever, and in the reservoir where you put the tub was a cockroach. And I'm like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. A cockroach is sitting inside the reservoir, and I'm about to pop the tub in and crush it. And at that time, the roach didn't react, didn't move. I didn't move. I was trying to think things through, going, what am I going to do? I didn't want to back off and create any movement, because if it ran, I was afraid it was going to run into the recesses of the internal mechanisms of the Keurig. Because I was thinking I could get a vacuum and vacuum them out, and then I could wash out the tub and all that. Long story short, I threw the Keurig out. Because what happened was my biggest fear. I went to try and get him out, and I didn't care to touch him. That was fine. It didn't bother me. I was going to grab him. I didn't care if I crushed him. I was going to grab him, take him, throw him in the sink, hit the garbage disposal, whatever. He ran, and he went into the inner workings, and I panicked, and I closed the lid, and I heard a crunch. I threw my Keurig out. There was no method of taking apart and cleaning out that was going to satiate me in saying, I know I spent $200 on this, but $200 was wasted on a cockroach. That was my worst experience ever. I will tell you that ever since then, I've primarily made coffee utilizing Chemex, what's the word I'm looking at? Let me read your notes. Okay. French press. Thank you. Utilizing French press. And, most recently, got into the French, Italian. Hold on. I'll tell you here in a second. The Milano stovetop espresso maker, Cuban coffee maker, stovetop coffee maker, mocha, Italian espresso, Greca coffee maker, brewer, percolator. Holy shit. It's from Grosch. Anyway, but I use that. So I do have the Keurig. I still use it, but I always make sure I look into it. And realistically, I mean, I was like, holy crap, why is a roach in my Keurig in the first place? Because I hire Orkin to take care of the pests. They come in and outside of the house. Florida is very tricky though, because Florida has year-round summer, especially where I was at, year-round summer. So there's always bugs and gnats of some sort. So we usually have to have Orkin in them come more than once, you know, every so many days, simply because of the rains will wash away everything outside post haste, right? So yeah, I just couldn't understand it, but I'm very mindful of my Keurig. And if I'm not going to use it for a long period of time, I will take a plastic bag and I will enshroud the entire thing until I go to use it. So I'll drain the filter. I'll take out the charcoal filter, everything, and I'll put it away and not use it for that period of time. Because I just don't want to deal with it. Fortunately, I haven't had to deal with the roach in it as of yet, but if I do, it's going to be the same soup, different bowl. I'm going to toss it in and just get done with it. That's it. No more, no less. Anyway. So what else? Leslie, my librarian, thank you for your email. Wait a minute. There's more. About all errors courtesy of autocorrect. I don't know if I covered this on the last show. I almost missed this. My apologies. About all errors courtesy of autocorrect. I always respond to you on my iPad, and I change the signature in the settings from sent from my iPad to all errors same on my iPhone. Because why be like everyone else? Thanks for the great episode. You always make me laugh. First day of classes tomorrow. Hope I get a good group of kiddos in my class. Your librarian, Leslie. Again, all errors courtesy of autocorrect. I'm going to have to use that. Definitely going to have to use that. Anyway, moving on. I want to talk about something before we talk about coffee. And there is, on MSN.com, there was a advertising about Mr. O'Rourke wanting to take away AR-15s. And I will tell you, excuse me, didn't mean to hit the mic. This is a tough subject. And I know Leslie and I didn't talk about it much on when she was on the show. It was a touchy situation. Neither one of us were really prepared to talk about it. And the situation that happened at Walmart at the time, I mean, that is a travesty. To me, any situation where it involves a school, a place of business, anywhere, you know, where people are harmed, killed, and severely injured, it's never good. But I know we talk about the need to ban weapons, to ban ARs, to ban semi-automatic rifles, right? And I have a bit of an issue with it. I really, really do. Excuse me. Damn, I don't know where this is coming from today. But I will tell you, I have an issue with it simply because, and this is a simpleton's point of view, okay? I am not dismissing. Let me tell you, I went back and researched a timeline of worldwide school and mass shootings, okay? Going back, and there's some that even go back further than 1996, okay? And the reason why I know this is because there is a historian from a previous unit that I was assigned to that still has my email address and has me on his distribution list. And each week, each Monday, he posts historical events that took place by each date, and each date has a list of years chronologically. And in some of those dates, the date time groups, those years, there were some mass shootings. There were some bombings in the United States and in other countries at that time. We're talking 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, so on and so forth, right? So this type of violence is not new. The weapons might have changed, but they still operate the same way. And talking to somebody I work with, you know, farmers back in the day had the same weapons as the military. A lot of the military was made up from localized people, local farmers, defending their land, defending their country. So it was the same thing. Whatever a soldier had, that's what a farmer had, because that's the weapon that was made at that time. So when I look at this, again, simpleton's point of view, not dismissing everything, I look at this as right now, we're no different than they are. Yeah, we're not farmers. We're not having to defend our land, but it's within our right to bear arms. That's the way I look at it. Plain and simple. I'm not getting wrapped around the axle that people want a ban on AR, but AR is no different than an M1 Garand. An M1 Garand was utilized in what? World War II, Korea, Vietnam for a little bit. Semi-automatic weapon, 30-06. That was the weapon of the time. So if gun stores made that weapon and it was a weapon of the time and they modified it for home use, that's what we got. ARs, pretty much the same thing. They're modified for home use. We don't have ARs that we get, build, or buy that that are automatic, that are full automatic. It's one click from safe to semi, and you're firing single shot. None of them do burst. None of them do automatic. Hence the reason why semi-automatic rifle. So I have a little bit of an issue with it. I think a majority of the people that are against weapons do not. Now, there's two different types of people. Let me explain. And I'm not sure I'm going to articulate this very well, so let me apologize in advance for this. I think people, or I feel as though, that most people who don't like weapons, who don't like rifles, who don't like guns, that is the way that they're built. That is the way that they're wired. You give them a gun to shoot, to give them a feeling, a sense of what it is to operate a handgun or a rifle, and they don't feel comfortable with it. They don't like it. That's fine. Not saying you're a pussy, you know, not saying you're weak. That is just not your forte. There are people like that. There are also people who are of the nature that they can employ a weapon and they feel comfortable with it. They feel fine. It's a method of protection. There is nothing wrong with that. Okay. These are the type of people that are volunteering to put on their weapons, whether it's by waist or carry an assault rifle and walk around at school and protect those kids from individuals who want to go out and hurt people. People, it is not the weapon that hurts people. It's a person who is operating that weapon. The person who is operating that weapon, we need stronger background checks. I firmly believe it. But the issue that we have with the background checks is this. This is nothing new. This is nothing that I thought of. I didn't have an epiphany. This is something that I'm sure many of other people thought of, and it's commonplace. It's a recurring theme. The term slipped through the cracks. There will always be someone or somebody or some people that will slip through the cracks. To me, those individuals who are first-time gun buyers, who are non-violators, may have a few wires crossed, never been seen at a hospital talking to a psychologist or a psychiatrist, or have a history thereof, those are the ones that are going to fall through the cracks. Those are the ones that are going to pay attention to the news media. Those are the ones that can't find social acceptance in modern mainstream society because of their thought processes until they find somebody who thinks like them, and that person or people fuels that desire to want to hate, to want to hurt. And then they get a weapon and they get a background check and it clears. No matter how deep you go, if that person has never visited a psychiatric ward or had any sort of psychiatric care, if in fact the background check goes that deep, that if they did, there's going to be those people they don't find. There's going to be those people that are sitting in the shadows whose brains are stirring, and they're believing certain things, and they're adapting to certain things, or they're adopting certain ideologies, is what I should say, and thought processes, and are of a certain mental state that wants them to cause harm or puts them in a position to want to cause harm. Those are the people that we need to worry about, the ones that slip through the cracks. To take the weapons away from everybody who could potentially defend against those, I think is completely wrong. No matter how aggressive the AR looks, and yes, they look aggressive, they look menacing, and I get it, but that's the design of the times. And I'm not wondering if back in those days, in 96 and before, that if they looked at weapons and said an M1 Garand looks menacing, a Springfield 03A3 looks menacing, you know, a six shooter looks menacing, a 357, Jesus. A 357 Dirty Harry Magnum gun looks menacing, sounds menacing, does menacing damage. but it's all on the operator as how they choose to employ that weapon. I have assault rifles. I have handguns. I have my handgun. I keep a 9mm. I keep a 9mm by my bed at all times. I purposely live in homes where the bedrooms are upstairs, so I have the tactical advantage. Because my first warning system is going to be a noise, my second warning system is going to be my dogs, and then that gives me ample amount of time, nanoseconds, to prepare to get ready for somebody to try and come in and hurt me. I feel sorry for anybody that does. I feel sorry for anybody that takes an attitude that they're dominating and they're going to go into a house and feel as though that they're going to come out unscathed. Timeline of worldwide school and mass shootings, gun-related tragedies in the U.S. and around the world from InfoPlease.com. The following lists notable worldwide mass and school shootings from 1996 to present. What distinguishes mass shootings from other incidences of gun crime, mob violence, racial lynchings, etc. is not entirely clear. Most commonly, mass shootings are defined as events in which a lone perpetrator or a small group of perpetrators uses firearms to kill three or more victims. The highest figures given by the Gun Violence Archive qualify it by the number of people shot rather than the number of people killed. School shootings, by contrast, have no numerical qualifier. A school shooting in any incidents of gun violence occurring at or in the vicinity of an educational institution. The full scope of gun violence in the U.S. and abroad is immense. In the U.S. alone, there were 346 mass shootings in 2017, or about one per day. Despite attempts by nonprofits like the Gun Violence Archive and by government agencies, it is almost impossible to present every mass shooting. Rather, these are modern shootings that garnered particular attention or had a lasting cultural impact. Find the date, location, and in short description of each incident. So, February 2nd, 1996, Moses Lake, Washington. Two students and one teacher killed. One other wounded when 14-year-old Barry Lucatus opened fire on his algebra class. March 13, 1996, Dublain, Scotland. 16 children, one teacher killed at Dublain Primary School by Thomas Hamilton, who then killed himself. 10 others wounded in the attack. February 19th, 1997, Bethel, Alaska. Hey, text message. Bethel, Alaska. Principal and one student killed, two others wounded by Evan Ramsey, 16. One in Yemen, Pearl, Mississippi. October 1st, 1997, two students killed and seven wounded by Luke Woodham, 16, was also accused of killing his mother. He and his friends were said to be outcasts who worship Satan. This is what I'm saying, you know, and in some cases, you're like looking at this going, really? Wow. And that's just a few. I mean, this is 1999, 2000, 01, 02, and we're talking everywhere from Erfurt, Germany, Fising, Germany, Essex, Vermont, Montreal, Canada, Bailey, Colorado, Virginia, Finland, Florida, Ohio, Oregon, D.C., Texas. April 2nd, 2014, Killeen, an Iraq war veteran, opens fire at Fort Hood Army Base and kills three people before turning the gun on himself. At least 16 people are injured. The suspect, Army Specialist Ivan Lopez, was being evaluated for post-traumatic stress disorder, according to the Pentagon. Another fatal shooting at the base took place in 2009. I mean, holy crap. And I will tell you that this has been around for years and years and years. I believe the proper way is stricter gun laws, deeper background checks. That's the bottom line. I don't think we need to disarm America. I don't think it's fair to disarm people. I don't think we need to go that far. And evidently, throughout the years, throughout the past, the same situation has happened. I think news media, I think politicians over-amplify and exploit a lot of these stories. Again, these are travesties. I'm not dismissing them. It's sad that they happen. They shouldn't happen. But the sole cause, in my opinion, is the fact that there's wires crossed in each and every one of these individuals in some form or fashion, and that we need to take a deeper look into those individuals. But again, there's always going to be somebody who slips through the cracks. That's going to be inevitable. Can't do anything about it. Anyway, moving on. The retail apocalypse. Apocalypse. These big retailers closing stores and filing for bankruptcy. Now, I am not going to get into each and every store. I think there's like 57 of them listed. But it brought something to my attention because it kind of hits close to home to me. So here's the deal. I like buying stuff online. It makes it a lot easier than having to go into a store, walk around, try to find it, get it, deal with people, deal with crowds, things of that nature. There are specific advantages to buying online. However, there are some things that I don't buy online. Let me be clear and truthful about this. So yes, I have purchased clothing online. That is my biggest thing. Clothing is an issue for me because I would much rather go to a store and buy clothes because of the fitment. I want to see how it fits. I want to see how it feels. I want to be able to see how it lays in proportion to my body. Certain materials and certain types of clothing lay great on others. Me, not so much, right? So I look at it from the perspective is that I must be present in person to look at the style, look at the make, look at the feel, and then put it on and try it. And if I like it, I will buy it. And sometimes I'll buy more than one. But I don't think clothing can be done online specifically because of certain issues. Now, I am going to totally contradict myself. I have ordered from Territory Ahead, and I've been fortunate so far to pay attention to their sizing chart, to take measurements with the tape and say, okay, I will go ahead and buy this shirt. And I get it, and it fits absolutely fine. I go buy another shirt. I get it. It fits absolutely fine. I go buy a third shirt. I get it. It doesn't fit absolutely fine. So it's a hit or miss in some cases. I would think that, I guess, what I'm going to try and do is I'm going to subscribe to, I think it's a Stitch Fix. Give them my information and see what goes. The only reason why I bring this up is because there's sometimes I'm inclined to say that while I like ordering online, I like being able to get out of the house and go shop. I like being able to pick stuff up in the store and physically see what I'm buying, look at the quality of what I'm buying to see if I want to get it in the first place. Because you do see things that are being sold by companies who are doing Kickstarters for certain inventions and things of the like, and you get it and it's cheap and it breaks and it's not quality as they're made out to be. Some things are great. Some things are bad. Some things are kind of in between. The fact that a lot of these stores are clothing. Some of them are clothing stores, by the way. But the fact that these retailers are closing as part of this retail apocalypse, as they say, to me, those are the ones that fail to jump on the bandwagon and try to balance out. Well, no, some of them probably have, I would assume, have shifted their resources to e-sales, to e-commerce, in order to stay alive. But it's sad to see that the physical building, the brick and mortar, as it were, is going away or could go away. And I have experienced that face to face when I was stationed, I believe, Kansas. Went to this mall, and there was only three stores open in that entire mini mall. Three. The rest of the buildings were vacant for lease, with no hopes of anybody even moving in. You know, so it really begs to question, if this happens to a majority of not just big malls, but mini malls, what happens to that real estate? What should we do? What should we do as a city? Should we convert them into something better? Should we just go ahead and lay waste and plant trees and grass? You know, those type of things. Give back to the environment if those buildings are not going to be used. People are losing money if they can't lease them out. So why not do something different? I don't know. But this kind of caught my interest because I'm a person who does a lot of buying online. I don't go to the stores all that much anymore. Unless there's something big that I need that I'm not going to be able to order to get shipped and really realistically do not want to pay freight charges for. So I don't know. But it's just something to look at. It's really interesting because some of the stores I've heard of, others have not. I mean, they're talking about Fox Business breakdown, which prominent retailers have closed stores or filed bankruptcy in recent months. Amber, Crombie & Fitch, Aerosols, American Apparel, BCBG, Bon-Ton Stores, The Children's Place, CVS, Dress Barn, Dollar Tree, Fred's, Foot Locker, Gap, Guess, Gymboree, The Children's Clothing Retailer, never heard of that one, H.H. Gregg, JCPenney, The Limited, Macy's, Payless, Radio Shack, man, I loved Radio Shack growing up as a kid, Sears, Kmart, Signet Jewelers, Shopko, Topshop, Toys R Us. Well, we all knew about Toys R Us. Victoria's Secret. Ooh. Wet Seal. And those are just some of them. But yeah, it's not hard to imagine that this is happening. It's funny though, because we went from going into stores to catalog orders to going into stores to going into stores and ordering online to ordering online and somewhat going into stores, to are we going to eventually migrate to fully online? What do you think? Just curious. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on. So let's talk coffee. Coffee. So here's the deal. As we've always stated before, and somebody asked me this, like, hey, you seem to go to a company and talk about their coffee. And sometimes you always come back around. Excuse me, coffee again. You always come back around to Iron Bean, Death Wish, and Iron Bean, and then Death Wish, and then primarily Iron Bean. There's a reason for that. One, because we really love Iron Bean coffee, and we like Death Wish coffee. I mean, those are two small businesses that have been up and coming from the start. Now, I wasn't with both of them, or when I say with, I don't mean with as in I worked for or anything like that. What I mean is that once I found out about them, I've been with them ever since. And they have grown immensely over the past couple of years. And to me, that is fucking awesome to see businesses like this, world-class businesses, go out and produce world-class coffee for world-class people. And then some. Right. So anyway, so yeah, there's always going to be that revisit of certain, of the brand, but certain flavors that that company makes. And there is a majority of them. There's like 9 or 10 that, or more. There's like 9 or 10 that Iron Bean alone has that I haven't tried them all. And the other piece is when we go to order coffees, from these other companies, depending on where they're located, they take time to get here. And of course, with the weather that we had Dorian, and then we had the tropical storm in the Gulf. Some of the companies that we order from, the way that they deliver, they come through some of those areas. So anything down south that we've ordered is getting here very slowly. And so that's fine. You know, it is what it is. But we had placed multiple orders, and one of the orders that we placed was originally for some merchandise until I saw that Rocco was available. And I really, really been wanting to try Rocco. Now, Rocco is an Ethiopian. Oh, fuck. I can't pronounce the last name. let's see. You know what? Here's what we'll do. It's Ethiopian.
Yirgacheffe.
One more time. Ethiopian.
Yirgacheffe.
I call it you're gay. No. It's
Yirgacheffe.
I don't call it that. I call it Yirga. Yirga. It's pronounced with an I, or I think it's primarily pronounced with an I, but Rocco is an Ethiopian.
Yirgacheffe.
Okay. So if you want to know, if you really want to know what
Yirgacheffe
is, it's basically, so it's written like this.
Yirgacheffe
is a variety of coffee very much appreciated all over the world. It is produced in Ethiopia in Central East Africa. These precious beans are grown in the homonymous region, sometimes transliterated as
Irgacheffe
or Irgacheffe, I guess. These fine
Irgacheffe
beans become a high-quality Arabica coffee with a dense, fruity sweetness. Not everybody knows that coffee was discovered in Ethiopia and then exported all over the world. It looks like a young shepherd in Kaffa, the Ethiopian region where the first plants were discovered, could not believe how his goats, always slow and lazy, would get so excited after eating those unknown little fruits. At first, coffee was cooked in a special way and then eaten. Only later did it become a warm drink we all enjoy.
Irgacheffe
is very much appreciated in Europe and the United States. So, I will tell you, the Rocco Ethiopian
Irgacheffe.
All right, I'm going to stop. I'm going to stop. The way the natural process is, and this is what Iron Bean says on their website, is there is something pretty special and unique about an Ethiopian natural when it's at its best. We are excited to introduce one such coffee. Who should drink it? Those who enjoy coffees that insist on being noticed. Notes include tropical fruit, blueberry, watermelon, jasmine, displaying a rich acidity and silky mouthfeel. This coffee is pleasingly exotic. Fair trade certified, USD organic. Really good coffee. So we ordered a pound of the whole bean. And I will say this. So I was very particular with the way we weighed this Waco. Yes, I'm drinking coffee, not touching anything else. We were very particular with the way we made this Rocco. So I will tell you, we did a Chemex. And with Chemex, I always rinse the filters at certain water temperatures when the pot is boiling. So I rinse it like two or three times to make sure all the particulates come out of the paper and then dump the water. At the time that the water is starting to boil, that's when I grind the bean and put the bean inside the filter and then immediately lift the pot off the stove and begin the slow pour. And I pour slow concentric circles until all the grounds are covered. I take it up to a certain level, let it drain, take it up to a certain level again, let it drain. And that's how I do it. Now, the water I use is triple filtered. So this is what I mean. And it's a little bit extensive. So I take the refrigerator that has an inline filter, and that's filtered water that goes into what's the name of that thing? Doggone it, I can't think of it. Brita, into a Brita water filter. And then I take the Brita, I pour it out into a big decanter, and then pour it back in and then filter it again. That's the water I use when I boil and make the coffee. I don't use tap water, period. I don't use the water straight out of the refrigerator. I will do what I can to either double or triple filter it. I do not grind the beans until just before I'm about to pour the water. And it comes out great. The same thing goes for when I utilize a French press. So same basics with the water. Do not grind until I'm ready to pour the water. So I grind, dump, pour, stir, press, and I'm good to go. So those are the two ways I do it with that. Now, there is I mentioned it earlier, my Grosch coffee maker, which it goes right on top of the flame. It could be used on electric or a gas stove. And it's mainly made to be an espresso maker. So when I say it's a 9-cup, meaning 9 little shots of espresso. So I take it and I grind the beans to an espresso level if I want to get that hit. So I will drink all 9 little cups in one big cup. That's just me. You can take lower your grams. So take it from 20 grams to like 10 grams of coffee and just make regular coffee. It's going to be regular light. Wow. I'm trying to slow down and I'm still fucking up my words, people. This is amazing. Anyway, so rather than doing 20 grams of a grind, I do half or less. Put that in my Grosch, my Italian coffee maker, and then run it that way. And then this way, you're not drinking espresso. You're drinking a quick cup of coffee. But that's for like singular, hey, I just want one cup for myself, done. That's if I don't want to do Chemex. That's if I don't want to do French press, or I do siphon. And siphon is a totally different process for me anyway. I actually go a little bit more in depth on that. But either way, I would tell you, I know we've reviewed Iron Bean Coffee this before, and we'll do it again. And I give Rocco a 5 coffee beans out of 5 coffee bean rating. This stuff is absolutely awesome. I can't say it any further. So go out, get some Rocco, get some Ethiopian,
Irgachefe,
and enjoy. I cracked myself up. Anyway, I think that's where we're going to end the show. Thank you for being patient. I know we intended to get the show out last week. Series of unfortunate events kept us from doing so, but that's okay. We're here this week. I really want to extend a thanks to Leslie for her constant emails for the show. Leslie, we do definitely want to have you on the show again, and this time we promise we make it more prepared. We definitely want to do so. I'm also thinking about it's kind of a long time coming. I don't know how this is going to play out. But again, I know I've referenced doing videos of this podcast. I'm probably going to do so if I could stand looking at my ugly mug on camera. So we're going to test that out first and go from there. The other piece that we're looking into is a co-host. Looking at doing a co-host, because a lot of the times, to be honest with you, I get tired of talking to myself. I mean, I get a lot out. It's great. Being an introvert, this is awesome. This is great for me. But sometimes it's good to have somebody on another microphone. It really, really is. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Anyway, No Syntax is a production of Caffeine Driven Media. Music is by Rim Sky Music and can be found at premiumbeat.com. That's www.premiumbeat.com. I don't know where that came from. Anyway, sound editing is by Auphonic.com. That's www.auphonic.com. Background music can be found at melodyloops.com. That's www.melodyloops.com. Want to send an email? Have comments about today's or other shows? We want to hear from you. Email us at nosyntaxpodcast. That's one word, nosyntaxpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can post your comments on our website at www.nosyntaxpodcast.net. You can also follow us on Twitter at No Syntax Podcast or Facebook at facebook.com/no-syntax. Don't forget, we are on iTunes. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review. Good, bad, or indifferent, it doesn't matter. We will still love you. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you all soon. Have a great week.